The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
It's All-Ireland Final Week. Anything to say, boys?
No, it's great to be here. It's great.
How would you stop?
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
OTB AM. With Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
It is 7:30. It's OTB AM, and you're very welcome along to this Friday's edition of the show. We've got an absolutely stacked show for you. Needless to say, we are going to spend a lot of the morning talking about the All-Ireland football final. It is the eve, and we'll also touch on the camogie as well. That little rattle you can hear in the background is our man. It's like when Michael Palin even got dispatched to Mogadishu. It's Eoin Shehan, and he's in OMA. Eoin, come on in. What's happening?
How's it going? Welcome to OMA. We are in a town that is absolutely buzzing for tomorrow. You're right. It's the eve of the All-Ireland Final. It does feel strange that it's on a Saturday and that Friday is very much the eve of it. Once that ban gets out of the way, you'll be able to see the poster over my shoulder, which is a beautiful superimposed photograph of... Well, sorry, it's not superimposed. It's Conor McKenna sitting on the Iron Throne. Game of Thrones, Sam is coming, starring Fergal Logan and Brian Duher. We are outside Sally's here in the middle of OMA, a place that is legendary for its pre-final posters. 2008, you might have remembered the Gooch Busters poster that they had up there with Gooch's face superimposed onto the ghost from Ghostbusters with Brian Duher, one of the protagonists on that occasion. He is the protagonist once again for tomorrow, and I can only say that this county in general, not just OMA, is absolutely buzzing for tomorrow night.
It sounds like, Eoin, you've started off, you're more of a Tyrone man than a Tyrone man.
No, I'm a Tyrone man.
Oh,
why
you?
Did I say it? Why? What did
well,
I let myself down?
Are people, when you've been going around saying, oh, it's great to be here in Tyrone, have people been sort of picking you up on it?
No, I've been corrected on Tyrone years ago. someone in college told me that it's Tyrone, not Tyrone,
yeah,
and I got a rude awakening.
They're touchy about it as well.
Well, it's the name of their county.
What's the general buzz been like? You've been, obviously, this is the fourth of the counties you've been at, involved in the various finals. How does it compare to the other counties you've been at over the last few weeks?
Well, it's right up there, to be honest. It's very hard to try and compare and contrast all of these different counties because they've got such different cultures. Tyrone is an interesting one for obvious reasons, and it's different to the other three counties I've been at, where you drive, obviously coming from County Mayo, you drive through Fermanagh and get into Tyrone, and the first couple of towns you get through, not necessarily a sense that there is actually anything happening this weekend. But then you start to drive through some different towns and you get closer to, say, Auchnacloy, which is my first stop yesterday, and you start to realise, hold on a minute, people go absolutely mental. The GAA community and the community that's interested in Gaelic games go absolutely mental for this. It's going to be interesting. We'll be chatting to Declan Bogan and Enda McGinley a little bit later on, and they say that all communities have really row in on All-Ireland Final Week, that you have people who don't traditionally watch Gaelic games coming out of the woodwork on All-Ireland Final Week, which I guess is a good thing. So I've gone from Auchnacloy, we went out all the way to Ardbow on the shores of Loch Ness yesterday as well, which would be Brian McGuigan territory, and all the way out there, they're absolutely buzzing for what's going to happen this weekend. We came back in towards Garvahy as well, managed to get a sneak peek before training started last night of Garvahy, and then we finished up here in OMA, where there was a roadshow last night. A number of roadshows going on around the county in the build-up to tomorrow. People have this insatiable appetite for preview because it really feels that this is the first All-Ireland that Tyrone have a proper chance of winning since 2008. Yes, they've been there since. They were there only 3 years ago, but this feels so different to 2018.
But, as you know, having been in Mayo, and I was down there myself recently, the county has gone absolutely buck crazy for this. There are uninhabitable parts of Ballymacrory that are painted red and green. The sheep are red and green. Everybody's singing the red and green in Mayo. There are rosary beads up and down the county that are rubbed to within an inch of their life with praying for them to get over the line tomorrow. And like, there's a lot of the country obviously that's behind them, and I think that's I mean, I don't know that it's so much anti-Tyrone, right, but I also think that if I'm from Tyrone or involved with the squad, then I'm like, that's anti-Tyrone, and I've got a bit of a chip on my shoulder about it. Is that the sense that you're getting there, that it's like everybody hates us and we don't care?
I would say that would definitely be the case within the camp, but I think that actually has seeped out towards the people of Tyrone as well, where they have that sense of swagger where they just laugh off any sort of negative criticism of this team for whatever reason this summer, or any sort of distaste that traditionalists would have towards them, going all the way back to Pat Spillane and his Puke football in 2003. The supporters at this point absolutely live off that stuff. They love it because they know that the players love it. And you're right, that is exactly going to be the thing that this camp are going to be using as motivation. But one of the interesting themes that I've certainly got over the last couple of days is, yes, that's a really important factor, but I think we're completely underrating what someone like Brian Duher has done on a footballing level with this Tyrone team. I think we see him as the inspirational captain back in the day and the inspirational manager now, and so, and the man who's tapping into that, really. But I'm not sure. The more people I'm talking to around the county, the more I'm like, is Brian Duher actually underrated in terms of his managerial prowess, his tactical ability? And even if you take away all that emotional stuff and that siege mentality, Brian Duher is a bloody good manager. And that's one of the themes that I'm taking out of this, that, yeah, it is important, but it's not everything.
Yeah. Like, the two of them have a bit of a weird CV, haven't they? We might get into that a little bit later on, like, in terms of, I mean, who has at Intercounty GAA until you actually get at it, got that sort of top-level CV. One last question before, because I know you've got some loads of stuff, but gathering loads of stuff over the last 24 hours, and so many compliments about your own from people in the different counties you've been at over the last couple of years, people that I've met over the last week or so, about how hard-working you are and the quality of your work. So I'll endorse that right here. But before we get into the first piece of video that you've got for us this morning, is there much chat? Now, you might want to sort of whisper around there, but is there much chat about the whole vaccine stuff, or what's been the general buzz about that?
Not really, to be honest. It hasn't been a big talking point whatsoever. It didn't really come up in the preview night at all. I think people have been happy enough to forget about it a little bit, because I guess when you have an All-Ireland final to talk about and worry about and look ahead to, you're not actually thinking about the negative connotations to it. I guess that comes from being a supporter of a county, and you put yourself into your own people's shoes. You're probably not going to get carried away with the whole vaccine thing. I presume it was a massive talking point in the build-up to the Kerry game. I'm not going to lie, though, it does feel like old news. It does feel like this isn't important. And like, you talk about people maybe around the county not wanting Tyrone to win. Like, I think that exists in any given year. Like, I'm not necessarily sure why that is, but I think this year it is hammered home by the vaccine situation. Now, some people are taking the negativity from this perception that they pulled the wool over Kerry's eyes or something in the semi-final. I would reject that wholeheartedly. And I think anybody who is backing against them or not supporting them this weekend because of that element of the whole situation, I think that's a little bit unfair on Tyrone, to be quite honest with you. But of course, people have their reasons for not getting behind this Tyrone team when it comes to the vaccination situation, because we know that people maybe have opted against it for the sake of being fresh for training, because it has been a mad few months for them.
And everybody can hide under the cloak of, you know, we want Mayo to win because of the curse. That's the overt reason we can give for it. You did that Game of Thrones tour, didn't you, a couple of years ago? Tyrone, what has it got links with Game of Thrones, or is this just a bit of crack in the wall?
A bit of crack in the wall. As far as I'm aware, there wasn't much of or any of Game of Thrones filmed in Tyrone. It was all County Antrim and County Down, wasn't it? So I stand corrected if that's...
Well, I mean, look,
if
you'd just done a tour on and paid any attention to what you were doing a couple of years ago, you'd be able to answer that.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure that Tyrone was not a county we were brought to on our bus tour a few years ago. I've done multiple Game of Thrones tours, Adrian. You know, it's one
that
topic that you come to me this morning on, and I'm
good
actually
junk
okay.
At own. You're front and centre. Here, you're very fresh, by the way. I'm really astonished by... How do you manage... What's your secret to drinking 10 pints the night before and appearing so fresh at 7:30 of a Friday morning?
Not drinking 10 pints the night before is probably the secret to that. I did have one last night, I'm not going to lie, when I was watching the festivities unfold at Healy Park. We'll show you a bit of that in a while.
Yeah.
Basically at Healy Park, just to give this a little bit of context before we play the clip, because it may seem a little bit random, but it was essentially a sound check for what was the Tyrone music car. And I've been told that this music car is a big thing that is part of the Tyrone match day. It drove in front of the team bus in the 2018 final, and An Garda Síochána down below weren't too happy with the fact that they had essentially given, they'd cordoned off roads and stuff for what they thought was a team bus, but actually it was just this music car that was driving around. So it was there in Healy Park last night. They were getting the records up and running and giving it a bit of a lash last night. It was a totally sort of random evening where you're chatting to random punters, but then you're also chatting to people like Peter Canavan, who was there last night as well. And then, as I mentioned earlier on, we went out to Ard Bow to speak to Patsy Hagen, who has written and performed a couple of poems, especially for this year's All-Ireland final. And it doesn't hurt as well that it's on the shores of the biggest lake in Ireland. So it's a glorious setting.
It's beautiful. Let's take a look at some of the build-up.
Hello. with your dedicated funds. Pat's plan has something to repair. My kingdom did come, but their will it was not done. So we pay mighty Mayo and good bar.
Sing!
I'm on your hands with your dedicated funds. Give us something special to remember. Show them all Ireland Day.
Not only is it the biggest day maybe in the GAA calendar, it's the biggest day in the Irish sporting calendar for many. And, you know, it's not every year thrown her in the All-Ireland final, and what it does do, it brings back memories of your own days playing, and you know, how privileged we were, first of all, to get that opportunity to play. I know before me, there's a lot of men put in so much effort and didn't get that opportunity. So, look, I know what the boys are going through. I know what it means to them. And, you know, just for anybody that's involved in the GAA up here, it's certainly special times. And we just have to make the most of it. We've lost one or two as well, and I know what that's like. So it's important we get over the line. But, look, we didn't expect to be here in the first place. And we're enjoying the crack and the buzz that comes with the razzmatazz that comes with an All-Ireland final. And we'll let the boys knuckle down and get on with the hard work.
We are standing now in the old cross of Arbo, the ancient ruins there beside us, the chapel, the old church. The cross you'll see as you come back down again, 18 feet high. My back here is to the loch. Loch Ness, it's about 22 mile long by about 8 mile wide. You know, and it touches five counties. So it's a place of great history, you know, a lot of history to this place. We're talking about Derry, Antrim, County Down. There's only a couple of shorelines of County Down. Armagh, and of course Tyrone. Them four counties, their biggest shorelines would touch it. They say there's only a couple, maybe three shorelines in County Down that touches the loch here. But as I say, it's a place that people come here in the evening time just for peace of mind, you know. There's something about it. You know, and I live beside it, and people that would visit here, they would say, as a most party, you take this place for granted. I don't. I think it's a beautiful place, you know, especially in the evening time. If you get a nice evening, you couldn't want to be in a nicer place, you know.
Well, I was excited, you know, 2018, the fact it got there, but we probably knew it was going to take a massive performance for us to beat Dublin, and Dublin to be well below par. This is different. We beat one of the favourites to get here now, and we're up against the Mayo side, and there's very little. I know they are slight favourites in the bookies, but there's very little. I see it, and most people see it as a 50-50 game. So you have a real possibility of winning it. So I suppose that is exciting, or, you know, from our point of view as well.
It's going to be one hell of a final between Tyrone and mighty Mayo. If I could get my hands on a ticket, be God, I believe I would go. They are two of my favourite counties. Tyrone, of course, coming first. Though them Mayo lads can play football, but there's a rumour that they have been cursed. Oh, it's maybe only a rumour, and someone is spreading a lie. The same say that Sam will elude them till somehow greater this day. So, God, I'm asking a favour. If there's a chance this rumour is true, if this old fella's still with us, God spare him another week, maybe two.
The atmosphere in Tyrone this week is unbelievable. I can't believe what I'm looking at. When I pass two different wee villages and see so many flags and emblems up, and wishing all the Tyrone lads all the best, it's fantastic to see, and it's so rejuvenating that I've been driving through some wee villages, and I can't believe what I'm looking at. So I come down through Omagh tonight, and the St. Enda's lads put up all the flags, and it's just unbelievable to see it. We're going to have a great day on Saturday.
Do you just leave Dara alone all week?
Absolutely. He doesn't listen much to what I say. He keeps himself anyway, so there's no problems in that front. He's definitely not overcoached. And he's in with a great setup. There's a lot of good coaches in the Tyrone setup at the minute, and there's a lot of instruction being given when they go to training sessions, so he doesn't need to listen to any more when he comes home.
It's going to be tough opposition. Our boys will be put to the test For those boys, they showed they're no slouches, them buckos that come from the west. For the Dubs, they thought they'd roll over, but Mayo simply would not. Six in a row, as far as you'll go, you must be content with your lot. And there's not another team in the country could have done what them fellas did do. Defied all the odds and the bookies and conquered that army of blue.
I'm very proud, and I'm very proud of Fergal Logan and Brian Duher. They've done a fantastic job, and them only in the job short time. But they have a lot of experience, and they've played great football themselves. So they have been round the mill several times, and they're great lads to lead a team. I would just love to be on the team.
Now, our boys took care of the kingdom, another team that shouldn't be beat. Spillane needs to watch his blood pressure, for he's getting himself into a state. He's more concerned about COVID, who has a job, and the ones that have not. I swear the way he's behaving, the man, he's losing the plot. Now, he knows his stuff about football, but there's a wee fact he seems to forget. While Logan, for sure, is one couture, but his mate is a well-qualified vet. For he has our men on ball steroids. They're out grazing now as we speak. Forget about 70 minutes, them boys could run for a week. Now, if some of our players start mooing or growing wee horns in their head, Duker's to blame, but it's all part of the game. It's all the strange food that they're fed. And our Lingus are complaining about Morgan. His long kicks, why they're going so high, they think it's a shame during the game their pilots has refused for to fly.
I've said from last week to now, I couldn't make my mind up regarding a winner. I don't see any between the sides. When you try and break down advantages and disadvantages, some teams have an advantage. One team has an advantage in one area, the other in the other. And besides, it's Mayo we're talking about, and they don't do anything in a straightforward manner. So if they're ahead by a few points going down the closing stretch, you can see them allowing Throne the opportunity to come back at them. And Throne haven't been good at closing out games. We struggle against Monaghan. We struggle against Kerry. We nearly let a 5-point lead slip. So I see a few big calls being made at the end, and there could be very little to separate them, and we might have to come back the following week to decide the winner. Come on, you red hands, where you're dedicated fans.
For we're going to bring the sound back home again. For we're going to bring the sound back home again.
But that's enough of the nonsense. A big flag now has to be made. The wife says she's got me a ticket and the bed and breakfast is paid. So we're heading off to Dublin. We're supporting Tyrone, as you know. And if we're a bit, so we'll still celebrate with those gallant lads from Mayo. Come on, Tyrone!
That is absolutely cracking stuff. I really enjoyed that poem particularly. I think that's some of Vaughan's best work there that he's done over the last few weeks. Bit of a flavour of what was going on in Omagh last night across obviously that poem was off the charts. The line, our boys took care of the kingdom, they said they couldn't be bait, I think might have been amongst my favourite. It was a cracker on. He was in top form.
Yeah, he was. And Pat Spillane getting yet another dig from the people of Tyrone via poem form this time. If there's, like, what's the Simpsons meme? The stop, he's already dead meme. That's Pat Spillane on the ground, and the county of Tyrone huddled around him, and they just will not stop. And you know what? He gave them enough of it, I think, in the build up to the semi final.
Loved it. What was his name?
That was Patsy Hagen, out in Ardbow. But I said earlier on that it's the same club as the McGuigans. Crucially, not the same club as the McGuigans. The same sort of parish, but a different club. So. In case Patsy Hagen is listening, I apologise for that. Different club, same area.
He'll be watching us, and he'll be out enjoying the view around Loch Ness this morning. It sounds cracking. Come here, just obviously in relation to the team and reading a little bit about the dynamic of it and how they come about, and there's a lot of stock been put in the 2017 Sigerson team. There's like 10 players in the squad that came through that, and obviously the facilities, and this is not by chance that all this stuff has come about.
Absolutely not. And we'll hear about that in our next piece this morning, that this is a really well thought out, well planned setup. And I think it does kind of go back to the 2000s a little bit. That really gave the county the belief that not only can they contend, but they can be the best team in the country and sustain that for a period of time. That necessary sense of superiority, which led to a lot of resources being poured into the county, which led to the development of the Garabahi complex, which led to a really well thought out plan. There was actually a question last night at that roadshow in Healy Park about, I'm not sure if they come to the conclusion, but they think that every single member of this backroom team is from Tyrone. It's very hard to kind of decipher because backroom teams are so ginormous, but they think that every single member of the backroom team is actually from the county. So this is an entirely self-sustained charge that they've made this year. We'll hear from Damien in just a moment, who's the coaching officer, but he makes the point that it's so important about keeping your coaches in-house and making no bones about the fact that when Ryan McMenamin is coaching in Fermanagh, when Peter Canavan is coaching in a different county, that it's okay to feel a little bit jealous about that. It is okay to think, how do we get Peter Canavan back? How do we get Ryan McMenamin back? It's been a big theme for a lot of counties over the last 7 years about, do we appoint an external manager or do we try and appoint somebody who knows the county a little bit more? Tyrone have certainly gone for the latter, and it's worked a treat, really.
Yeah. Kerry's been doing it for years, obviously. It strikes me that Brian Swanson had those purple things going on a couple of years ago. You've got every local business around the Omagh area driving their vans past you now with a little bit of branding. And sure, listen, why wouldn't you? It's the week for it. Right, you've mentioned Damien Harvey, coaching officer with Tyrone GAA, and you were chatting to him last night.
Okay, we are here in one of the dressing rooms in Healy Park with Tyrone GAA coaching officer, but more importantly, friend of the pod, Golf Weekly, fully paid subscriber, Damien Harvey. How are you getting on?
Absolutely, and I'm looking forward to the new deal on the pod for next year. I hear it's going to be very, very competitive. I'm a wee bit worried that Nathan isn't going to make the cut, but given the fact that he declared a handicap of about 29 or something the other day, so once he's down to mid-teens, we'll maybe get him out in one of these big competitions.
Between Mayo and Tyrone, Nathan Murphy has come up in conversation so much, so I think we've stroked his ego enough. We do want to talk to you about this Tyrone team. For a lot of people on the outside looking in, Damien, this is a team that have kind of come from nowhere, but from the inside looking in, I presume you saw this coming.
Well, I think it's fair to say that obviously with the change in management, the expectation levels would have been there, hopefully, to win an Ulster Championship in the near future. They've done that in year one, and this is very much seen as a brand new project within their own. So it was brilliant to get the Ulster Championship. Brilliant to retain status in Division 1, but to get to an All-Ireland final, I think it's probably beyond expectations, actually, this year, given the fact that these guys are, the management team are just are on the scene. But obviously the lads have fully bought into it, and All-Ireland final, and it's a brilliant occasion and a real fillip for the whole county.
What is your strategy from a coaching officer standpoint then to ensure that this is the beginning of something?
Well, I suppose that would have, it's unending because obviously we're looking at what we're going to be trying to do with our academy teams this winter, trying to get them up and running. Obviously, we give a lot of time to the clubs this year, and we didn't take out any of the lads, underage lads, this year at all, bar the Tyrone minors. So we're definitely looking at a strategy over the winter to try and get the academies back up and running again, and. But obviously, there's a few things we need to put in place structurally and probably financially in order to make that happen. People think there's an unending conveyor belt of talent in Tyrone. That's not always the case. You have to work really, really hard, as we've seen other counties do. None more so than us, because it's all right having a team in the All-Ireland final, but there has to be another generation coming behind it, or else you're going to be in the doldrums for a while after.
Can you try and explain how you manage to ensure that? What are the practical steps you take to try and ensure that there is a generation coming behind it?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the quality of coaching that you put in and the calibre of people that you have involved. Academy Tyrone, under the sort of new restructure a few years ago, put really good quality people in. Some of them have drifted away, and it's important that we look for another. Or some of the same guys actually to return. I know that there's conversations ongoing around that at the minute, and we want to try and attract a really high calibre of coach back into the system, and that means some of those are ex-county men, and some of them are just really, really good coaches. That's what it's about. It's about making sure that the clubs, when they look at the coaching that's available in the Tyrone GAA, realise that it's a higher calibre than, you know, as high a calibre as possible. And if you can do that and you can put that structure in place, you've got a chance.
That's really interesting, because that is a theme that a lot of counties are grappling with at the moment, the idea of appointing external managers. There's sort of an instant gratification element to it. Sometimes it leads to real success. Is there a real case to be made, though, that trying to appoint coaches from within the system does lead to longer-term benefits?
Absolutely, it has to. It has to. You see the current Tyrone setup at the minute. You know, the likes of Collie Holmes, Joe McMahon in the background, helping out with Fergal and Brian. That's what it's all about. Peter Donnelly, ex-county player as well, involved in the strength and condition, doing an absolutely superb job. And that's the quality that you want involved. And I suppose when the clubs in Tyrone see that, and when the young players see that, then that's what it's about. Going external is the easy route, but I know a number of counties, you know, feel that they have to do that to get themselves up the ladder. But here in Tyrone, it's about trying to develop from within. And we know that there's enough quality players who have taken the jersey, got out onto the field and done it in the past. And who better to learn from than those guys? That's what it's all about.
The thing is, there's obviously only one senior manager's job. When people like Ryan McMenamin or Peter Canavan are coaching, as I don't want to just pick out from other managers here, but they're the two that come to mind. Do you try and tap into what they're learning from another county? Do you make long-term appeals to them to try and come back within the fold? Or how does that dynamic work?
Absolutely, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to attract these guys back into the system again. But obviously they need to see that there's a longer-term structure in place, and that there's opportunities to go in and maybe take an academy team and develop into maybe taking a Tro minor team, an under-21 team, and maybe someday take the senior team as well. They need to be able to see that. And maybe we haven't been as good as we could have been with that in the past. And certainly, I say, before you can attract that quality coach, you need to ensure that there's a system in place. We're grappling a wee bit of that at the minute, and we have to get that right. Once we get that right, we'll have a chance, and then we can start, you know, looking at the next generation coming behind. Obviously, good strides made in the last couple of years in terms of getting the Tyrone Minors into an All-Ireland final this year again, which was a very important step for us. And the fact the under-21s won the Ulster Championship recently, not 2 seasons past either. So those are really, really important building blocks and building stones for the future. And that's what we're trying to achieve. But we're grappling to make sure that we get these boys recycled back into the system, because we want them going out to. We're more than happy for them to go out to other counties for a while, but we need them here. We need them back, and we're mad keen to get them back.
Yeah, and I don't know, there's no shame in saying that either. People sometimes dance around that subject, and I think it's pretty obvious that people would love all these greats of the game to come back. It's interesting that you mentioned the underage success. Saturday is the 2015 under-21 champions against the 2016 under-21 champions, so Mayo and Tyrone, there's a similarity there in terms of bringing that generation through. Is there anything you've learned down through the years in terms of stuff that works and stuff that doesn't work when you're taking through a crop of talented youngsters?
Well, I don't think you can look for immediate success with them. Obviously, even from the way they've changed the minor system, a lot of people disagree with it, and I disagree with it myself. The fact that it's under 17, it's the step up from 17 to maybe even 20, to under 20, and certainly into senior, you don't make that step anymore. Very rarely do you see a 17-year-old step into a senior jersey at 18 years of age. So that dynamic, or that getting that preparation of a senior team, does take time to develop, and you're only seeing these guys really start to come together now. It's taken probably 6 years, you know, since that All-Ireland title, but now you're seeing a very mature and developed footballer, and you know there's another generation coming pushing at their heels as well, and you know, like Conor McKenna coming back in from Australia is a massive boost for the county as well. Delighted to see him. The fact that Cathal McShane opted against going to Australia to play for Tyrone shows you that the esteem in which that county jersey does still hold for players, and I think it's incumbent upon somebody that's involved in any county board, or particularly our own county board, to try and do everything they can to work to keep these lads, you know, still at that same level. Because I think sometimes we can take it for granted, but the amount of workload that those guys have to go through, you know, to get to play at this level is really, really, it's hard work, and we have to be as supportive as possible.
Can I ask then, out of curiosity, Fergal Logan and Brian Duher, how much autonomy do they have in terms of overhauling the system, bringing in coaches? Do they have final say on everything? Because again, if you're looking at other counties, we often hear stories of county boards imposing what they want on a management.
No, Fergal Logan and Brian Duher are appointed, and it's their job to put the structures in place that they need to deliver for Tyrone. And you know, I think the county board try and stay out of it as much as possible, but I'm sure then when the finance sheets are looked at, there may be people with other opinions. But ultimately, it's the job of the Tyrone senior management team to put the structure in place around them that's required to deliver. And that's what Fergal and Logan and Brian Duher seem to have done, well, they have done at this stage, because they've got us through to All-Ireland final. And as far as we're concerned, it's bonus territory.
When it comes to centre of excellences, then I think Garvahy is probably the most famous one in the country. I don't know why that is, but it's a phenomenal facility. There's no question about that. How do you utilise that to the best of its ability, and how do you ensure that you get the best out of your coaches with that sort of facility?
Well, it is. It's a remarkable facility, and it's taken a lot of hard effort and work and a good bit of vision to try and get it put in place. I suppose, and a lot of that credit must go to our fundraising committee, Club Tyrone fundraising committee, who have gone out and lifted significant sums of money from people all around the world. Tyrone people who have put their hands in their pockets and have supported Tyrone GA and put that building and put that facility in place. But I suppose the really important thing is that everybody feels a buy into it. And I think sometimes people can look at it and say, well, that's just not for me. It's not my part of the GA, or it doesn't feel like my part of the GA. So there's a body of work, again, we need to do from our perspective to make people realise that facility that's at Garvahy is for everyone, not just the extraordinary player. It's for all our players. And there's work to be done, there's no doubt about that. But in the meantime, you know, we have an excellent facility up there that we can take our county teams. And this year, thankfully, it was passed earlier in the year that the ladies and Camogues now you also use that facility free of charge, which is fantastic. And in this age of equality, that's exactly what you want.
Do club teams get in there, like pre-COVID?
No, the club teams. Some club teams would have been using it just as a facility, maybe to train pre-season and so on. But in the main, it's mainly a county facility, and you know, we should be able to. We should be opening it up to more people. That's something that has to be tackled and sorted out, because we do want to open it up as much as possible. And I suppose whenever people are coming up to us, dropping off kids for academy teams and so on, we want them to feel as you know, that that's their building, and it is their building. It's not a management committee or a Tyrone GAA county committee building. It's a building for the Gaels of Tyrone and Ulster in terms of a wider use, because obviously we want it to be used for our schools, Ulster schools competitions as well.
Very interesting. Well, Damien, it was great chatting to you. Do you think Tyrone are going to do it on Saturday?
Listen, I was listening to your conversations last week about the power rankings, and I know Gerard Gilroy was on having a chat with you as well, trying to convince you that...
never listen to Gerard Gilroy's rule number one.
Tyrone should probably be a little higher than fourth, and Kerry would have been second. You know what? We're just delighted to be there, and so we'll see how it goes.
It might even be up to number one if they win on Saturday.
Do you know what? I have a feeling I'll never be number one with you, Owen, but sure, we'll see. We'll see. Gerry, you're right. I think Tyrone GA, Tyrone, definitely team of the noughties, team of the decade.
We will not open that kind of worms right now, because I want to get out of here alive. Great to chat to you, Damien. Thanks a million.
All the best. Thanks.
You'll have no choice, Owen, but to lash them up there on come Monday morning. You'll have no option if they win it. Be a big jump.
Yeah, well, like we never really, because there was obviously an actual game to talk about a couple of weeks ago, but Pat Spillane jumping ship on the whole team of the decade thing pre the Kerry Tyrone game was an absolute disgrace. Like, I mean, I understand why he did it, because he wanted to butter up Sean Kavanagh before laying into the team, or he wanted to show some sort of balance in his Tyrone view. But that was an absolute disgraceful abandoning of all his values, I thought, and I don't think that got enough airtime.
Have you been waiting till, like, you're standing in the middle of a moment to bring up this conversation?
That's a good point. Probably, like, I mean,
I'm happy to get into let's get into it if you want.
we leave that one off.
Come here. One thing I wanted to mention, sort of struck me listening to the conversation there with Damien, that the structures that have been put in place, and like you were saying about the influence of the managers that are there, it shouldn't detract, obviously, from the fact that, like, it now looks like the parting of the ways with Mickey Hart also was a bit of a masterstroke. Like, it wasn't a universal, this is definitely going to work for them. The two lads come in and they have a bit of experience, obviously, at the underage and a bit of club, but this is a huge step up. The structures that have been put in place are very important, and they will obviously serve the development of players and the progress of the team generally, we'd assume, particularly with that facility, but not to detract from what the two lads have brought to the party.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I think that you can't really make an argument against the fact that it was the right decision to move past the Mickey Hart era. Like, even when you listen to someone like Sean Kavanagh speak, there is the sense of regret that maybe it didn't happen a little bit sooner and that this sort of transition didn't happen maybe during his last couple of years. But then again, Mickey Hart was coming up against the greatest team of all time, and even with Doer and Logan at the helm, things wouldn't have gone any differently in terms of the All-Ireland medal count. So the timing of these lads coming in is also perfect, let's not forget. It is a great time to be coming in to any setup at the top tier of intercounty football, because you know that there may be an easier All-Ireland feud than there would have been during the peak Jim Gavin over Dublin era. But it's not taking away anything from what Doer and Logan have done. They have reinvigorated certain players that looked like they were dead when it came to their intercounty careers under Mickey Hart. They have discovered players that we hadn't heard of before, and I think that they deserve huge credit for the way they've managed to tap into all different areas of the county as well. There's such a spread of different clubs across the team. The same goes for Mayo, in fairness. And I think actually when we get into the analysis of this game, there are so many similarities between what Doer and Logan are doing and what James Horan has tried to do, especially during his second stint in charge.
Yeah, and whether or not the two lads pull off Stephen Kenny and include Derek Canavan at the weekend, I presume, is a big talking point as well. Seems to be a lot of nods from Mark Bradley, though.
I think so, and I think the Derek Canavan shout, that was Andy on the football pod, wasn't it?
It was Andy, and Stephen Rochford is talking about it in the Star this morning as well, yeah.
Right, okay.
That's or Paddy it might have been, actually, yeah.
That is interesting, because I guess when it comes down to the analysis, and it's going to be interesting to see what the lads are thinking in quick picks later on, but it is an impossible one to call. But yeah, one of the reasons why it's an impossible one to call is that it's impossible to know what curveballs are going to be played. And really, is it a curveball if Derek Canavan starts? I mean, it's hard to pick Tyrone's starting team anyway. Nobody really knows what's going to happen anyway. So maybe it is so up in the air that every ball we're going to see is a curveball anyway. I don't know. Like, I think Enda McGinley used the point that it's like throwing a deck of cards up in the air and seeing where they land when it comes to the matchups. And I think there's a certain element that's kind of the same when it comes to the team selection, and certainly the positional selections tomorrow. It's a fascinating sort of under a mysterious cloak sort of All-Ireland final, and it's not something I think we've experienced in recent memory.
Yeah, the team naming is going to be absolutely fascinating, and I think that, like,
also pointless.
Yeah, and like Canavan, Derek Canavan looks like he's literally been born, like watching him the last day to play on that stage. You look at him and just think, how the hell could you leave this guy out? But look at it, they have options, and it means that they have depth, and we will see how it all plays out, and you've loads more coming as well. Thanks for the minute on, good man.
Cheers, Adrian.
You're watching OTB AM. We're live in association with Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. We've a pack show coming for you between now and 10 a.m. this morning. We'll give you a bit of a sense of that. We've obviously just been bringing you all that Tyrone build up over the last half hour thereabouts. We've lots more to come. Damien Harvey, we've just heard from there a couple of moments ago, Tyrone coaching officer and friend of the pod, as he was telling on as well. Declan Bogue and Enda McGinley, they're in absolutely cracking form. Watching a little bit of that earlier on, and they're going to talk to Owen in a few minutes' time. We'll bring you the sports pages, some interesting stories there. Jonathan Hill's take on whether Stephen Kenny should stay or go, and a few other bits and bobs as well across the back pages. More we'll bring you very shortly. Quick picks, it'll be our last one of the year, and I have to say it's the one that I've wrangled over the most as to which way I would fall on it. So that is coming your way at 9:15. We'll preview the Camogie finals this weekend and the company of Sarah O'Donovan. That's just after 9. Vera Powell obviously out in front of the media yesterday with that big announcement from Sky and their sponsorship, shirt sponsorship of the women's national team. That's at 9:20. And John Giles, in conversation with Nathan from last night's show, that's as well on the way from 9:30. Lots of comments, by the way, coming into us this morning. And good morning to everybody who's been dropping in some of those comments on YouTube and beyond as well, including one from Darrow Toole wondering, who knows which players will be described as testicles this morning by AB. And it wasn't. I mean, I'm glad that you've actually properly represented the point I was making as opposed to describing the entire county when we were talking a couple of weeks ago. But nobody's in the firing line. Certainly in that way, at least anyway, this morning, Dara. But good morning to you, and thanks a million for dropping in. We're going to come back after these very special sit-down interview, Owen, in the company of Enda McGinley and Declan Bonk. OTB
AM. I don't know if I'd be entirely right in saying there was a massive buzz in 2018. I think there was a wee bit of excitement, all right. But if you look at the matchup, like, you know, Tyrone came in, and that was the first year of the Super 8, so that was a novelty. They'd beaten Donegal up in Ballybofey, which was the first time that had happened since, I think, 1972 or whatever. They had a bench. There was similarities in some ways. Kieran McGeary was coming off the bench. Harry Loughran was another one was coming off the bench at the time. Like, so the last 20 minutes had a great sort of arsenal to unload at the time. But I think, though, just because they played Dublin and Omagh, and they really, I think they went after that game, and they narrowed the pitch, of course, too, for Stephen Cluxton's kickouts. They did every trick.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Uh-huh. So you're narrowing the pitch for the kickouts, as you said, as Emna said, and you throw everything at that one game in Omagh to try and get that, but they didn't. They didn't win that game. And I think then once they were in a final against Dublin, there was a little bit of a thought, it's great to be back in an All-Ireland final, but I'm not sure, I'd say the most rabid Throne fans, that they truly believe they're going to win.
I don't think the buzz was the same, but I would put that, the primary thing I would nearly put that down, we beat Monaghan in the semi-final in 2018, wasn't it, in Croke. And for Tyrone to get over Monaghan, that's something we'd done regularly. That didn't really, it wasn't a famous victory. It wasn't a famous performance. Going back to previous years when we won it, like 03, obviously, it was the victory against Kerry that just put rocket fuel in the county. Mm. And it is so similar this time round. Like, the victory against Kerry this time, the way that match was set up with Kerry so strong favourites and our boys never really showing what they showed against Kerry, like the way they played, was massive. And that alone, it has the pride people felt walking away from Croke Park, just the way the boys had played, the way they'd represented the county. And even you can sense it again, just there's something about Tyrone. And when Tyrone are at their best, that's what you want to see. And it's not necessarily about brilliant football or at, but whenever Tyrone can play with that edge and play with that real passion, I think that's our A game. And we brought it massively against Kerry. And with that, I think the thing is ignited. Like, the difference after the Ulster final, there was no huge excitement after the Ulster final. Then you put the two things hand in hand. Dublin going out obviously has lifted every county, not just the ones remaining in the competition, but even every county outside of that. So everybody's that wee bit more excited. Then to take down Kerry, I think that has finished the deal for Tyrone, and there is a massive, massive buzz now with the team.
How did you guys manage to tap into that buzz in a positive way in the 2000s?
I suppose in 2000 we were, again, and this would be my both issue with our own team, the team that I was part of, in terms of the noughties and where we failed, and yet it was also our greatest calling card, was we loved playing on the edge. We loved playing when the deck seemed stacked against us. We loved playing when there was a point to prove, when there was doubts there, and each of our All-Irelands that was characterised by that sort of story underlying it. Then we lost, that was a great team, and yet we lost plenty of All-Irelands to teams that were not particularly great teams. They were. We went out of the Championship to Laois, to Mayo, who weren't a big team at that stage. Meath we lost as well, you know, so that team, whenever we didn't have that, we were bang ordinary. And unfortunately, the real top teams, the likes of what Dublin have done, and even I looked at that Kerry team too, they were more able to be there all of the time. And yet we needed this special thing for us to really reach the pitch of our game. Now, what I would say is whenever we really reached the pitch of our game, we were the best team. There was nobody could touch us. But my problem is the really top teams, can play with a level of consistency and don't have to have that real backs against the wall mentality. But it works, and it worked brilliantly in the semi-final against Kerry, and the boys got that edge. And I suppose the challenge for Tyrone as a county in the future, please God, if we can add All-Irelands, is become more mature and be able to reach a high playing level without that same chip on the shoulder thing. But when it's there and it's working, we'll play with it for another while.
Absolutely. When you talk about the deck being stacked, Declan, it seems that if you look at the bookmakers and the Mayo media, it's stacked in Mayo's favour this weekend. So when you're looking through some of the sports pages in Tyrone over the past couple of days, do they disagree with that?
Well, there's always going to be a partisan, you know, leaning for your own readership. That's just a given. Like, but even, you know, what they've done here in some of the papers being kind of clever here. Like, this is the Ulster Herald. They have good, pretty big supplement here, but I'm not sure whether I saw it in this or in another newspaper. But it was, they've gone and got national journalists to do their predictions. So they've kind of, like, I'm looking here and there's a lot of good content, there's a lot of good features, right? There's your Mayo features and Tyrone features and one in the back room there. But they've gone and got Michael Foley from the Sunday Times, John Fogarty from the Examiner, and Dermot Crowe from the Sunday Independent to give their verdict, which I think is kind of clever, because yeah, there's only so many times you can say Tyrone are going to win and come on Tyrone and so on. But Michael Foley gives it to Mayo, Fogarty gives it to Mayo, and Dermot Crowe gives it to Tyrone. So we're never ever going to mention those predictions again, are we? No matter what happens. But yeah, look, if you were to look through it, it's all sort of nostalgia. There's a big Art, you know, McCrory interview. It's ads from their own club wishing the players well. It is. It's get behind the boys' time, like, and that's what a local newspaper should be. Like, no one's buying the local newspaper to read a sort of a critique on how Tyrone might feel. Like, that would just kill the buzz completely. Like, you know, because there's been enough opportunity for, there's enough media out there, and I think that In these times now that newspapers have clearly been struggling, especially during the pandemic and all that, that an awful lot of local newspapers went out of business. Like, it was pretty awful what happened, a great deal of them. And if you want that critical analysis, you want to get into the nuts and bolts and matchups and motivational tools and all that, you've got a million podcasts now. Everyone with a dictaphone in their bedroom has a podcast, and is even on the odd one. And the point of this is, it's cheerleading. And that's good. I think it's healthy. I think it creates excitement. And I mean, and this is kind of a really odd thing for anyone to say, but I can still remember the county final previews in the Fermanagh Herald when I was a child. And I can remember what they wrote about certain players. Like, so I remember Davinish played Rosslea, whether it be 1991 or 1990. And Mark Gallagher was the big young thing, you know. He was about 18, 19, breaking on the Fermanagh team. And I remember that the pen pick said that he was the baby of the team. And he used to wear these white short ankle socks long before, you know, anyone was into it. And because now we've got Irish Newspaper Archive, you can look back over all the old newspapers. And I looked at it there a few months ago. There it was. It was actually word for word as I remembered it. Now, I accept that I might have been a complete nerd, but I think that there's plenty of nerds out there in Tyrone that will lift these newspapers, read them, and they'll be drawn into this wonderful world.
Yeah. I think the mementos too, like, you sort of gather up stuff. I've a bag at home where I've just also, I'll never look at it. I don't intend looking at it for 20, 30, 40 years, but it captures a real moment in time. And I think these, look, life's life, but when you get these special moments where there's this whole collective buzz about the place and everybody's talking about only one topic, it's a brilliant time. And given the past year and a half and the dreary sort of news cycle we've had and what's been cancelled and what can't happen and the problems with anything that is happening, it just feels brilliant to be able to get carried away. And I think even for me, I suppose it's the difference. This is sort of the first one that I've really felt truly as a supporter. You just feel completely free of everything and you're just allowing yourself to get carried away in it. And the fact that it's such a 50-50 game, and there's no point trying to be super clever about this match. Nobody knows what's going to happen. This is going to be mayhem. Or it's going to be mayhem within the four lines of a football pitch, and I think it's just all the more exciting for it. I think both sets of supporters, whenever they rack up in Dublin on Saturday, I think the buzz will be just massive.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what about even, and you know, your children are a bit more further on than mine. Like, you know, I mean, what does it mean to them? Like, you have your memories in 1989, so on. Like, so what do you think? What kind of fire is that igniting in them?
We were listening to a podcast on the road yesterday, coming down the road after collecting tickets up the road. Just everyone's revolving around football. And James was beside me. He's my oldest boy. He's 10. And we're listening to actually the Paddy and Andy podcast in the car. And by the end of it, like, it was just clear. It was completely 50-50 in bar. Andy putting out more advertisement for the fact that he wants a job role next year.
Is there a vacancy in the Antrim setup, do you think?
Well, I think
Kate could have him with Romana.
Absolutely. Well, I think you have to go through Paddy's wife, or Andy's wife, sounds of it. But no, at the end of the pod, it was just so 50-50. And James, you know, he turned to me and he just said, I've never been to a match in my life where it's been so close. Nobody knows what's going to happen. And of course, that's the naivety of youth. But we were in holidays in Mayo over the summer too. And we're in Supermax in Castlebar. I was eating a salad. They do a mean salad in Supermax.
Sitting
in Supermax Castlebar
and two fish and chips there.
It was just wall to wall. Every wall was covered with huge murals of just nothing but Mayo. And I remember I'd been talking to James about Mayo and everyone else down on, and we'd listen to Green and Red and Mayo because we're at Clue Bay and all the rest of it. So I was going through all of that with him, and he was sitting in Supermax and I says, Mayo are really mad about their football, aren't they? I said, yep. And so it turns out we're now playing them. So, you know, it's brilliant for them. It's brilliant for them to hear the story. They're all going in. They've Tyrone Day tomorrow in their schools. There's great buzz. So that lights a wee fire. It is part of what we're all about. You remember those childhood memories as much as you remember a Christmas or a special summer holiday. You remember a special moment for this. So as a parent, to be able to see the children go through that and live that, and with the way the Tyrone team played the last day and the way the Mayo team went about the business, you couldn't ask for better values in terms of a football team, that it was about effort, that it was them overcoming the favourites through sheer sort of force of will and desire and the teamwork and everything. So it's a win-win as far as I'm concerned, but obviously the tears will fall all the harder if Tyrone don't get over the line on Saturday.
Of course. What was that moment for you then in your childhood?
Mayo, actually, 1989. I was 8 at the time. We were on our way down to a family holiday. I think it was in Arklow, and we stopped then in Dublin for the Ireland semi, Tyrone v Mayo. And Tyrone lost that game. I was in the upper deck of the Cusick stand, the old Cusick stand. And I remember just crying, as you do when you're that age, crying after the match that Tyrone lost, and thought it was the most unfair thing ever. And that was that. But the rest of the family obviously were a wee bit older and a wee bit wiser, and it was still great, you know, to be down there and at it and all. But it was just the heartbreak of it. But that's the children, and for them, they've been used to Dublin. They were at the All Ireland final in Dublin, and that, you know, it was just such a disappointing day. But this one just feels different. There feels like such a real chance, and they can easily pick up the excitement of all the adults too, you know. So no, it's brilliant.
What's yours? What's your earliest sort of moment of like? I'm not sure. Do you have an All Ireland as a neutral in Croke Park or anything like that?
No, there literally is nothing like that. I'm not one of the big day merchants or the event junkies. Like, but if your question is sort of what ignites your sort of passion for GM, it's going to be entirely different than most, and that is just. Where we grew up in the country, there was our primary school was next door, as in like 250 yards down the road, and that's where my mother used to coach the local Camogie club, St Matthews, and like, you know, her parents would have been like chair people and so on, and that, and the championship in Fermanagh was the O'Connor Cup was the name. So like, that is your earliest memories of for me in the GAA, and like the area where we're from is actually, there was a great deal of, well, it's the only sort of hurling area. Like, but then I had an uncle who played for Enniskillen Gaels and captained them to the championship in 87, and I had another uncle on the Bogue side that played for Tampo and was always handy for a wee slippy goal and stand around for the rest of the game then. But he always got that goal every game, so it kept him on week on week on week. So, and you know, he used to lift me with the old brown leather, you know, the old brown leather kit bag with a towel, and you know, in a Sunday best coming from Mass after getting the feet of spuds.
You know, I don't remember that type of stuff.
But so that's, you know, I gotta say, when it came to big days out, like, all I remember, like, standing in an old wet bank in Irvinestown and watching a bit of a melee, lads from Brookborough fighting lads from Katie during a Fermanagh Armagh game. I remember being at in the athletic grounds the day that Fermanagh were about 9 points up with literally 5 minutes to go, and Dennis Hollywood got two goals and one of the Grimleys got another goal. And I remember walking out of that gate, and I clearly can recall, like, not thank me for saying it, but Colin Bradley, and he was bawling, crying, like, you know, about the unfairness and the unjustness of this. Raymond Gallagher was a minor and had played the previous week for the minors and made a senior debut then that day and hit maybe 1-5. So there was no... There were no, oh my God, you know, I'm in this big stadium and it's a massive game. It was just an accumulation of tiny little hurts, you know, and disappointments. And it stood me in good stead for watching for the rest of the time, really.
Can I ask then, what's like this sort of week like for you? Because, like, I smuggled in a copy of the Mayo News to County Tyrone, and you're in the Mayo News, you're in a couple of other publications. I'd imagine...
Other decent journalists are available, like, you know,
but just not in demand.
All Ireland final week is not just about the players. Like, it turns out that other people have to be at the very peak of their condition on a week like this.
I know. I've been doing a lot of planking recently. Now we're getting ready for this. But I suppose some people might feel, because you're in the county, you've got a measure of insight. Like, and you know, thankfully you don't get labelled with the, oh, he's a Tyrone journalist. Like, you know, he's just someone who is there and having these conversations. Whatever. You know, I mean, this just one of those things. It's great to be part of it because it's great to see it close up. And, like, you know, we've got children and God love them. I can't imagine them tomorrow at the Tyrone party wearing their Fermanagh gear. Like, you know, it's going to be very tough for them. But this is what you teach them, resilience, don't you?
So that's true. Your kids wear Fermanagh gear?
No, they'll not get away with it tomorrow. Like, it's just going to have to live in Rome, like, you know. And there was there... my house the other day, and he saw that there was a Tyrone flag flying, like, so it's for the kids. It's for the kids, you know.
For people who don't know, Declan has obviously moved to Tyrone in the last 10 years or so. We'll get into the match in just a moment, but I was saying to you off air that it's actually quite noticeable when you're driving. So I came from Mayo this morning, that there are certain towns in Tyrone that are completely absent of colour and certain towns in Tyrone that are absolutely full to the brim with colour. So how have things changed, or are they still the same when it comes to crossing the divide in the community in Tyrone, when it comes to sparking interest in this year's All-Ireland final?
Look, the political question up here, like, it's always going to be buried very, very deep. It's always there. So on times like this, it does come out. But as ever, sport is an easier vehicle. It's not a political thing up there, although some will try and associate the GAA with a very political ethos. But so for us, it is very much a very positive expression. There will be those towns that will not be put up simply because there may be more the unionist outlook and wouldn't be as much into the GA. But I know of many people of a unionist background, and they'll be watching this match and they'll be fully aware. They'll obviously be fully aware that it's going on, and they'll be able to hold a firm conversation. There will be plenty. We'll be sneaking out tickets here and there as well, and trying to get down as well. So look, are things moving on massively? Like, the North, things move very, very slowly, particularly on a political thing, and people hold dear to everything that they're about, and no less in terms of our side. And the GA obviously is exceptionally precious and is maybe even more deeply ingrained. So moments like this, to compete for an All-Ireland final or compete for an All-Ireland title, which for so long, not so long ago, just was a very, very rare and secondary occurrence, it's brilliant. But those differences are there, but things are gradually changing in Tyrone in particular. Like, it's a fairly, it's certainly holding the balance of power, shall we say, in terms of the GAA side of things.
But because it's rare too, then what happens is, you know, because the rare stories are wonderful. And I can remember when Fermanagh reached the Ulster final in 2008 in Tempo. They had Orange Mounting up because the Orange March was taking place that year, if I'm not mistaken. But the arrangement was then with someone from the local Orange Lodge that when Fermanagh got to the final, that, you know, the Orange people would have their parade, but then they would take their bunting down. But at the same time as they're taking their bunting down, they're using a cherry picker, and they were punting Fermanagh bunting up then. So they were untying your red, white and blue streamers and whatever else, untying on green and white at the same time too by sharing a cherry picker. And what, you know, going back even further than that, like you went down one Ulster titles in hurling, like, and I remember just reading that, having a wee look over the Revolution years again, because their former manager Sean McGuinness there passed away last week, and there's a brilliant yarn where the Lord Provost of Down sent a letter congratulating Down hurlers and said, like, I particularly admire, I think it might have been Kieran McGeehan's father, like, you know, or one of the players, and I say, and the line was, I used to see him trying to steal pheasants on my property as a child, you know. It was in the actual documentation. But I know, like, what Anna says is right, like, it does move slow, but if you take, for example, the time that the Moy won the All-Ireland Intermediate, was it 2017 against and Giltocht in the final? Yeah. You know, they had a number of Protestants that were part of their panel. Like, you know, even our old local club there in Atnacloyahaloo, there are a number of different people with different religions, and a lot of them had none whatsoever too, and that can't be forgotten. Like, some lads would be fairly stranger to an aisle in the church or a basket, I can tell you. But, you know, what you find is the more exposure that people get to GA, and what it actually is, like, rather than, you know, the aims and the ethos and point 1, point 2 about the United Ireland part, right? If you took that out of the rule book, it's my firm conviction that nobody would truly care. It wouldn't affect anybody, but it would do an awful, probably do an awful lot of good, because you get columnists who are just tub thumpers and they're constantly on, like, they know this rule far better than 99% of GA people, because it's a stick to beat them with. And, like, you know, whatever about aspirations towards a political solution to whatever we have, because it just doesn't work right now. You know, I think that the GA has to be seen as something apart again from that, rather than being dragged into any kind of debates or, you know, you know, at the end of the day, there's only two organisations that organise themselves on a 32-county basis in Ireland, that's Orange Order and the GAA. And, like, you know, there's certain things that we just should let go. And, I mean, that the bigotry or the kind of envy or whatever it is with GAA, like, it is pointless and it's self-defeating for anyone that kind of practices it.
Declan Bogue in conversation with Owen there, and Enda McGinley alongside him as well. A really good conversation, and really enjoyed sort of Enda's take there from his son that he's never seen in his life. A game that will be as close as this one. And I mean, Enda described it as the naivety of youth. I think there's something in it. We've all been watching football for a while, and it's really, there's nothing between them. So it's 8:32. Delighted to welcome you along to OTB AM. Lots of comments coming in, by the way, on the football and everything else as well. You are watching OTB AM, brought to you by Gillette. Good morning, start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with the new and improved razors. Some of those comments, Will, and good morning to you, saying that how much are Tyrone hated? Every time Dublin, who everyone hates, have played them, my mates from other counties up the north have been up for Dublin. That's how much Ulster counties hate Tyrone. It's not the Vax, it's the years of dirty play, underhandedness, arrogance, despite getting hammered over the last decade, etc. A lot of that might not be applicable to the Doer team, but it is what it is. Any tickets, wonders Kieran. We're all asking the same question this morning, Kieran. 24 hours out, maybe a good time of the week to get them. I'm still holding out hope for that. And Kevin says the curse of Mayo means that Tyrone will have victory. Yeah. So, look, we'll see. Owen is standing by. We're going to let you know what's happening on the back pages, including otbsports.com this morning. Tyrone will look to swallow up Mayo in All-Ireland final, says Conor McManus. That was the Monaghan forward in conversation with the lads during the week. Brilliant story in the tennis. First time ever that a qualifier has made the final, a major final there, with the British tennis player Raducanu. So history, and she's up against another teenager in the final as well. So it's brilliant stuff, really. Irish golfers hoping to raise awareness of Parkinson's disease. That's one of the golf pieces up there. And the FAI should wait until the end of the qualifier campaign to assess Kenny's position, says John Giles, with a very measured take on the show last night. Across the back pages today, there is some reaction to those Jonathan Hill comments. We'll start with the Herald here. FAI chief coy on Kenny's future is the take of Dan McDonald inside. Hill refuses to directly back the manager, but has no problem with talk of long-term plans. Ronaldo, I will smash it at Old Trafford, and Mayo can break deadlock and bring Sam West, says Kieran Whelan inside. The Star, game run. Cristiano desperate to start. He's been telling Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, stick me in, none of this bench stuff. FAI calm on Kenny's future is the way that Paul Lennon takes it there on Jonathan Hill's comments. And Philly, which is one we'll come back to, Philly McMahon, leaders didn't step up. So strong stuff from Philly McMahon there on the reasons why Dublin came short against Mayo. The Irish Times, picture of Fergal Logan there, in the, Logan on the front there. Logan eager for Tyrone to grasp their final opportunity, writes Ian O'Riordan. And lots more build-up to the game there, including the fans' view. Mayo journey's been a life-giving and celebratory thing. Like, I think that's just a load of old codswallop that ultimately, once they win it, they all go, yeah, yeah, like, no, it was totally about winning it. The Irish Daily Mail, no promises, Kenny's future to be reviewed, says FAI Chief Hill. That's Philip Quinn inside. Sky High, historic deal for Ireland. That's the women's national team, and a picture of Rihanna Jarrett there juggling the ball with the new sponsor blazing across the front. And Tokyo hero Keane, Ellen Keane, we deserve more respect. And very much the tone of the conversation she was having with Jer on OTB AM during the week. The Sun, Ronaldo, I'm going to be huge. All goats, but will there be glory? That's the preview of the All-Ireland final, and some other bits and bobs there as well inside the Sun. One interesting one on the London Times this morning. UEFA chief in boycott threat to World Cup. It was only a matter of time, right, before this sort of this came out. We'll go into a bit more detail on that in a couple of moments time as well. The Mirror, time to sweat, boss. Kenny gets no assurances about contract as November D-Day looms. It's been interesting to see across the back pages exact same quotes, different spin. That's Paul O'Hare inside saying the FAI boss Jonathan Hill is not uncomfortable. I mean, I presume that means he's comfortable with Stephen Kenny speaking publicly about Ireland's Euro 2024 push. So that's slightly counter to the headline there. England claim Walker was racially abused during Stormy Poland clash. That's in the Telegraph this morning. Kyle Walker alleging more allegations of racism there, and it's a theme picked up on The Guardian as well. Poland racism row, denial issued after England claimed that Glick abused Kyle Walker, and Old Trafford gets the all clear after India COVID scare. That's the cricket, which is getting pretty interesting as well. So a couple of those stories to come back to. The and Owen, I think you're there. You've shifted location.
I have indeed.
You've moved into the toilet. Good man. Right, the story about Stephen Kenny and all the quotes that are across the back pages this morning. And I know you're not seeing all of this, but just to give you a bit of a sense of what's going on here. So, obviously, Jonathan Hill was out yesterday in front of the media with the launch of the new Women's National Team sponsor. It was a really great story. And in some ways, unfortunate that, obviously, it was always going to come up with Stephen Kenny, and that's grabbed a lot of the headlines today. But he's just saying that the direct quote here from the man, our normal approach to every international window is that we review that window at the end of our monthly board meeting. In this case, I believe it's November, it is. He says, in a calm and collective way, we will review the whole World Cup qualification campaign in the same way in November. And that's pretty much the essence of it. He goes into a bit more details about it. It seems quite reasonable. It's an unenviable position, I think, for him to have been in, because he knows full well that he goes in front of the media yesterday. This is obviously a justifiable, legitimate talking point. He's going to get asked about it no matter what he says. People are looking for a crumb of, oh my God, he's just said that Stephen Kenny is going to get sacked. Oh my God, he just said Stephen Kenny is safe, which means he's probably going to get sacked anyway. So it's sort of a bit of a thankless task in that no matter what he says, people are going to pick through it. They're going to read, as you can tell, as I said, from some of the headlines that have appeared across the back pages this morning, that people are going to read their own thing into it. So it's an unenviable task, but I think he's made a lot of good steps here. I think he's chosen the right words. He hasn't stoked it up. It's not any great guarantees. And it's just stick to the process. We're going to review it in November. We'll be calm and collected about it. He says Stephen Kenny is going to have his own input into that. You know, I think that if I'm Stephen Kenny reading those quotes this morning, I'm like, okay, cool. Let's get on with business.
Yeah, like, I guess there's one way for this to all go away, and that's to give Stephen Kenny a new contract. If he gets a little bit sick of the questions, then there's a pretty easy fix to it. But I think it's fair enough to play a wait and see game. I mean, we've seen quite divergent opinions on the Stephen Kenny reign so far. A lot of people want him out. A lot of people want him to get a new contract. So I wouldn't be surprised if there were people within the FAI and in the hierarchy who were still undecided about the next step. I guess it would be nice to have an idea on the 1st of January next year about what the future of the Irish manager is going to be. So this next window, these next run of fixtures are going to be really, really important to decide that. I think there's a really good feeling after the last night, to be honest. I think that it was finally a little bit of luck for this Republic of Ireland team. Maybe the rubber green over the next little while can paint a few better pictures when it comes to the final results. The qualification campaign is dead, but when it comes to the results, he probably needs just a couple of those to ensure that he gets that new deal. But I don't think that he needs to, for example, beat Portugal at home. I don't think that's the magnitude of result that's required. I do think that people like Jonathan Hill can see for themselves the performances on the pitch, and they can see that results are coming and better results are surely on the way soon.
Yeah, the Portugal chance has probably passed us by, hasn't it? In that, like, that's the shock to the system that Portugal needed, and now they're not going to take us granted anymore. So that ship has probably sailed. We'll see. But I think you're right when you talk about the easy thing to do is for the FAI to come out and go, right, we're giving them a new contract. But, like, the reality is, sure, they probably don't even know. Like, and they should be given the time and space themselves. Like, you know, in previous regimes, that's exactly what would have happened. They'd have come out and gone, well, we need to put this to bed. We're going to give them a new contract. Sign them up for the next 10 years. And in 3 months' time, they're saying, actually, this is a mistake. So let them see out the campaign and review it then, because it's, again, it's legitimate that they don't know themselves the answer to the question. So I think in that context, he's probably not put a foot wrong, I think, in that way. Some of the other stuff I want to come to. Philly McMahon, back page of the Star this morning, Paul Kane. He's been out and about at a launch this week, the Bulbs for Bees campaign, which was launched. And he was obviously asked about the defeat. And he said it was one of those things that I felt when things aren't going as well as they should, you're waiting for the next man to step up, for a leader to step up. And we probably didn't have that. Like, they are really, those quotes are going to come up again and again and again, because that's not, what he's saying there is not, things didn't go exactly our way in the day, little slice of luck that way, maybe we would have got over the line, or, you know, a bit of transition and those players get a little bit of, bit more cockpit hours and they'll be flying along. He's actually saying, and you look at some of the established players that are in that Dublin team, I'm sure, again, are reading those quotes this morning saying that's a direct cut at me. They're fascinating. It's a fascinating insight into what's going on in Dublin's minds post that game. Now, I mean, I don't know. He obviously maybe didn't, you know, don't step in front of Robbie Henley and everything will be grand, Philly. That didn't seem to be, it didn't seem to be a huge factor in his considerations. But I think certainly an interesting insight into the whole thing, and you know, if Stephen Cluxton was around, Owen, it would have been all grand.
It's a criticism of a couple of the younger players, I think, isn't it? That they didn't step up and show the leadership qualities that were required this year, when they have a billion different All-Ireland medals walking out of the camp over the last 18 months. There was a vacuum of leadership in the dressing room that was only going to be natural. So I think that's probably what he's getting at with those comments. Maybe that takes time, and maybe Dublin need to have another look at how they managed to create a leadership group in 2010, 2011, and kind of do a similar thing with this young group of players.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not talking about ripping the whole thing up and starting again, but I wonder, just on that level, are there conversations to be had?
Yeah, I mean, also, James McCarthy, Brian Fenton, Kieran Kilkenny, all senior established players, when he talks about the next man stepping up, like, maybe that is what he's talking about. But also, those players were on the pitch and have the capacity to, like, Dean Rock, Conor Callaghan, almost at this point, you nearly consider him to be a senior player. Like, yeah, there's a lot of established senior players out there who I think, and look at, I'm sure they'll do the reviews and they'll come back and say, there was a lack of leadership, what are we going to do the next time that happens? And also, those young players that you're talking about, they obviously, that's something that doesn't come in the first 2, 3, 4, 5 years of intercounty football. It's something that comes as their careers progress. So, but I'm sure they'll address it.
I think as well, you don't really know if you have it until you're in that sort of situation. Like, a lot of those Dublin players maybe weren't up against the pump a whole pile over the last few years, and really that Mayo game when the opportunity was starting to slip through their fingers and they realised that Mayo were making a real comeback, that was a proper pressure cooker moment. Now, it was a pressure cooker moment for Mayo as well, and they had players that I think a lot of people would have said they're not going to be at the level when it comes to the mentality that Dublin have, and that wasn't the case. They all stepped up and they really came through that game in spectacular fashion. So there will probably be a game in the next couple of years where Dublin get that back again. It's kind of hard to predict when these things happen, and they've done it once before. They've gone from the doldrums to a brilliant place, and you definitely suspect that they have the personnel and the players. You mentioned there the players, like, they're all around next year, and like, I mean, if they're not really driving this thing on next year and trying to show that the younger players need to step up, then something's really wrong.
Yeah, if I was Peter Keane managing Dublin, on who, you know, just wants to get through games with a full squad of players uninjured, it's the most important thing. Don't worry about winning. I'm really positive as a Dublin fan right now, because, you know, we're not having the conversation that had been had over the previous number of years where there's going to be a raft of retirees. It's not really. I mean, we don't know about Stephen Cluxton, and actually I would have thought the bat signal maybe had gone up ahead of that Mayo game. If there was a suspicion of a lack of leadership, like, you're putting somebody straight back into the mix, and I know there are complications with it, but yeah, there are reasons to be positive if you're a Dublin fan.
I thought Comerford did well in that semi-final.
I mean more from a leadership, you know, from that, criticism of him as a goalkeeper.
Comerford will be brought forward from that moment as well. Like, I mean, it's just a very needless dig at Peter Keane there, Adrian, I must say. Like,
I'm just saying,
the uninjured line was during the National League, and who were the joint National League champions?
It was ludicrous. It was you have to accept it was a ludicrous comment.
Well, I don't know. I think getting through the National League unscathed is, when it was so close to the championship, was a high priority. And they also managed to win the competition that, well, half of it, themselves in Dublin, are the real winners of this year's GAA season.
There's never been anything more Kerry. They've half won it. I'm just saying that, like, it's not when they sit down with the... I accept that it's obviously a part of the... It's part of your priorities, but it's not the priority. And he literally said the priority was to come through without any injuries.
I think that's fair. I think you can pick a lot of other stuff that he said that was nonsense, but, like, I think that was fair enough. It was the league and himself.
If there's stuff that's worse than that, then I think what we're looking for here is a bit of a power ranking.
If there weren't the goals, the game would have been fairly even, I think.
Okay. I'm with you. The Times, the last story to touch on here from across the back pages this morning. UEFA chief... the only surprising thing about this story is that it's taken so long to come to light. UEFA chief... in boycott threat to the World Cup. It's an exclusive from Martin Ziegler, chief sports writer there, who's out and about to get the quotes on this. And to be fair, it's a great interview to get. So it's the UEFA president, Alexander Seferin, saying that the plan that's been mooted and spoken about and fairly surreptitiously planted in the, you know, if you look at Michael Owen's tweets, you listen to Arsene Wenger, everybody's sort of a little seeding it out there, just... And suddenly, before you know it, it's a thing. But Alexander Seferin is going to make sure that, as far as any impact that he can have, it's not going to be a thing to have a World Cup every 2 years. He says it would kill football. So he ain't on the fence about this. And it now publicly pits the two powerhouses of world football on opposite sides of the fence. He's saying that UEFA could, and by all accounts, would decide not to play it. And interestingly, after that, how does that impact if I'm England, if I'm the FA, similarly in France or Germany or Spain, and I'm like, I'm seeing the dollar signs, how does all that play out? Do we end up with a bit of a European Super League situation, a bit of a breakaway threat? He says that South America are the exact same and they'll also boycott it. So, yeah, is it dead before it begins? Is that now the end of it? UEFA saying they're out, or is it a bit of a play for a bit more... a nice check there for 5 million, or I don't know what the equivalent of this case would be, but I would think a multiple of that. Really interesting to see how it plays out, but it's the biggest power play yet to counter these notions that have been put out there about a World Cup every 2 years. So that's what's going on with that this morning. And by the way, you are watching OTB AM. It's coming up on 10 to 9 this morning. Lots still to come. John Giles. And we'll get into our quick picks in just a few minutes' time. We're going to preview the Camogie finals as well in the company of Sarah O'Donovan. But you're watching OTB AM, brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. And Owen, I think you have a couple of the local papers there to let us know what's happening ahead of tomorrow.
We don't actually. I don't have them handy. I'll grab them.
It's fine.
And have them to you.
We will never come back to that. We'll never speak of it again. We'll never mention it again. And we will say that if anybody wants to get an insight as to what's happening with the newspapers, just go on.
Well, we got Declan Bogue did bring us through some of the local papers there. So I thought he had a box off. He of Tyrone residency, of course. Why would you need someone like me to tell you what's going on in the Tyrone media when you've got the greatest GAA journalists living in Tyrone taking you through it?
Exactly. Go and check out that full piece. Well worth it, and get it right inside in the papers. And I should mention, by the way, there was the best counterpoint to the there should be a World Cup every 2 years was the football writer Jack Pitbrook tweeting during the week, Christmas is really popular and is also good for the economy. So how about we change the Christmas calendar and introduce another Christmas on June 25th? It really sums up the whole thing, doesn't it? You can get behind another Christmas, Jesus on.
I mean, and also, I mean, the success of Christmas is in its recurrence every year. A World Cup every year is what I say, not every second year.
You'd basically at that point have Christmas all year round, right? Like, you know, the pre-Christmas sales would be never ending. Right, it is 10 to 9. As I said, we're going to preview the Camogie finals in just a couple of minutes' time in the company of Sarah Donovan. We're going to talk to John Giles as well, and we're going to keep bringing any more comments that you have about the football or anything else besides. Do lash them into us, and we'll keep bringing yours your way between now and 10 a.m. this morning. Right now, last time, barring a possible replay, it's time for the quick picks.
Some of these critics, these pundits,
I absolutely adore them lads. I have unbelievable time for them, but they're a great bunch, but it's not acceptable.
I'd like to play the hard man when they're on it. It's not very pleasant when you're trying to manage a team. All you're looking for is a bit of civility and a bit of decency, but they just dismiss you like you know, you have nothing to do with the bloody occasion.
Okay, let us have a look at the scoreboard going into the final week, as you said, possibly the final week of the quick picks. It is who in the lead? It is going to be Tommy
45.
In the lead, I think, at the moment. 45.
Followed
Adrian
by Adrian 44, Will 43, and then some other lad who ain't getting, who's going to stay there. He's on 39.
Yeah, it's me at the bottom of it. As we've already established, we have absolutely no interest in the scoreboard. But Tommy, you confident of holding on to your top spot? There is no prize for this, by the way, which just shows how meaningless this whole thing is.
It's absolutely not meaningless. Any internal competition off the ball is very much meaningful. Am I confident? Absolutely not. I have absolutely no confidence in calling this All-Ireland final one way or another. I actually, lads, have no idea how I'm top of the table. I can't remember top of my head how I got that many calls right.
Well, I can tell you, Tommy, if you want, I can give you the insight. What happened was, midway through the tournament, I was in a runaway lead that was unassailable. And the rules were changed with a view to toppling me off the table because people felt, you know, there was an agenda out there. And that's exactly what happened. And you fluked your way up to the top.
There you go, Adrian. An absolute fluke to get where I am.
Yeah.
So what is your thought process then coming up with your prediction for this week, Tommy? We may as well have a look at the predictions this week. It's Tommy going for Mayo by 1. I'm going for the exact same thing. Adrian's going for Mayo by 3. And Will is going for Tyrone by 2. So Tommy, you're first up there. Why Mayo by 1?
Can I change my pick now to Tyrone?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Can I go for a draw?
No.
You said no draws.
Give him a draw.
I'm only messing. I'm sick of Mayo by 1. I think they're going to do it. I think Mayo are going to get the job done. I'm very surprised we're not split down the middle. I'm very surprised by that. I thought Adrian, when you're chasing, you would have gone for Tyrone.
I'm glad I didn't, looking at that, to be honest. But, geez, Tommy, I don't know. It's exactly like you said. There isn't a game all year that I've been more torn about. It's impossible to know. Like, since Will predicted Wicklow to beat Wexford back in whatever it was, June, there's never been anything more close between the teams. I don't know. It's impossible. To be honest with you, I'll be absolutely honest. I sent this through to Joe yesterday when I was sending through my prediction. I'm going totally against what I actually think will happen.
Yeah. Did you not say Tyrone by 7?
That was my weekly gag. I actually do think Tyrone are going to win it. I can't bring myself to make the prediction, so that's why I'm going for Mayo and keep my fingers crossed. And I also, as I said, I don't think there's that much in it anyway, so I'm happy to go against my head.
Why can't you bring yourself to back to Rome?
My mother's from Mayo, and it has to happen, Tommy. We've had long years in our house where this thing about the who was it that Owen was talking to during the week, and he was talking about the RF who we couldn't see was saying, listen, we've really, it's all about the journey and it's nothing to do with the destination. That stuff is going to get blown into a rocket with Elon Musk up to whatever planet he's trying to get on as soon as they win the thing, and they're just going to go, yeah, no, it was totally about winning. So So that's it. I have no great sort of anti-Tyrone stuff. I just desperately want Mayo to win it, and I can't for that reason back against.
If there's any Mayo people sitting at home here listening to this, I'd imagine their stomachs are turning. There's no room for sentimentality in the quick picks, never mind on a GA pitch. The reason I'm going for Mayo is that I've seen Mayo in the flesh four times this year, and I've seen them building something. I wasn't convinced that they go in and they'd beat Dublin, but I thought they had a chance. Obviously, missing Killian O'Connor is a massive, massive blow. But this is a Mayo team that have got to back-to-back All-Ireland finals. They're with James Horan, who has an unbelievable amount of experience, one of the top managers in the game over the last decade. Brian Duhr and Fergal Logan are still learning on the job a wee bit in intercounty football. That Donegal game, if Michael Murphy didn't get sent off, could have gone both ways. It could have gone the other way very easily that day. And they've built from there. Monaghan should have caught them. Conor McManus and Jack McCarron kick wides. They wouldn't kick any other day of the week. They should have caught them that day. And Tyrone were perfectly set to beat Kerry. I'm not going to say who they were, but I was getting texts from friends from Kerry in the 24 hours before the game saying the ambush is coming. Kerry manifested that defeat, Kerry fans. But they were afraid that Tyrone would catch them. And they were like, do you know what? Just in case we get caught here, we'll say the ambush is coming. But the ambush had been set all along. Tyrone were always set up to be Kerry, perfectly set. I don't think the same game plan can work against Mayo. They're a completely different proposition. It's chaos versus chaos this weekend. And I think Mayo were a little bit more control of the chaos.
But Tom, is everything you're saying there not a reason to believe in Tyrone somewhat? Like, this is something that's been coming into my head as I really doubt my prediction. And you talk about Tyrone just edging some of those games. Like, they edged some of those games. Nobody knows which way this game is going tomorrow. So if somebody's going to win it, they're going to have to edge it. Tyrone have experience doing it. And everything you say there about, you know, the shoulda, coulda, wouldas of all the other teams that could have beaten them this year. The same kind of goes for Mayo. Like, I would say that Dublin were worse in their semi-final than Kerry were against Tyrone. And, you know, if you want to go shoulda, coulda, woulda, Dublin should have been better. Dublin could have been better. Robbie Henley could have missed his free. He could not have got a second one. So, like, if you're going to use that for Tyrone, you've got to use it for Mayo as well. So I'm not sure I'm buying that as the reason why Mayo win. I think Mayo actually just have better depth, and I think they have more grit in some of the younger players that they have. And I think that the winning of the game against Dublin was such a massive thing on their shoulder that they just couldn't get over the last couple of years. And regardless, as I say, that Dublin were poor on the night, I think still getting over that psychological mountain was a massive thing, almost akin to winning an All-Ireland final. So that's what's been giving me belief in terms of tipping them. But it's very, very hard. Like, Will, you're the one man who actually has gone for Tyrone this week.
Yeah, look, I think my belief comes from the fact that Tyrone have come through a series of very difficult games which have been left in nail-biting situations. The Donegal game, which Tommy was talking about, the Ulster final against Monaghan, even when they drifted a little bit, they were able to find answers and actually hold on and be so controlled in possession in the closing stages to ensure that they finished out that game on the right side of the result. And then against Kerry, while everyone is focused on Kerry's failings within the semi-final, like Tyrone, again, their performance in extra time, a little bit a mirror almost of Mayo against Dublin in the other semi-final, I thought Tyrone were excellent the minute that David Clifford went off, and that once Kerry lost that outlet, Tyrone were able to shut down the game very impressively indeed. And I actually disagree with some of your Mayo supporters who are saying it's about the journey, not the destination. This time round, it's definitely about the destination, because there's not too many finals that Mayo have gone into over the last 20 years where genuinely it has felt as 50-50 as this week is. They were underdogs in pretty much all the finals that they played against Dublin. They were underdogs going into finals against Kerry. And this time round, there's an expectation on Mayo to end the 70-year hoodoo because they have taken Dublin out in the semi-final. And I just wonder psychologically what that's going to do for Mayo, and the fact that Tyrone, because of the COVID-19 situation, this has worked out nicely with their preparation going into the game. They've had a nice little break period, and now they're, you know, pretty much up on the back of having beaten Kerry in the semi-final. I think the two teams are going into this slightly differently. And as a result, I think Tyrone are just going to edge them out. I think defence might win over forwards this weekend. And I was very taken by what Conor McManus said on Off the Ball last night. Like, I've been listening to so many previews and reading so many previews this week, and, you know, all the different blogs about Killian O'Connor might be back in training. McLaughlin, they found some way of making sure that he can get onto the pitch. Oisín Mullen is back. And I've actually enjoyed the build-up to this All-Ireland final a lot. But I think Conor McManus made a very good point, which is that Tyrone were more than happy to cede kickouts and to cede quite a bit of possession against Kerry to allow Kerry to come into their trap and then then turn them over. If Mayo can find the answers and have great variety to their attack, and if they can cause turnovers themselves, Mayo probably edge this one. But if Tyrone put the game plan out like they did against Kerry, I give them every chance of winning. And this wasn't just some pick to go. I think the Tommy will go for Mayo, so I'll go for Tyrone. I genuinely think Tyrone are just going to just about edge it. I was going to go for a draw, lads, but we kind of had this rule that we weren't doing draws and we picked whoever wins. So even if it goes to penalties,
There is a replay in this one.
Yeah,
there is a replay in this one.
I assume what happens here, lads, if one of us was to, you know, whoever we pick, if Tyrone go on to win on penalties or Mayo go on to win on penalties in replay, it's still the winner that we picked as opposed to a draw. That's the reason I didn't go for a draw.
Yeah,
I will be coming back to the quick fix.
So I've gone for 3 points to Mayo. I wish I'd gone two. Tommy's gone one. If Mayo win by three or more, I win. Is that right?
Yeah. Is that all you care about?
Yeah. And by the way, come here. I would say, right, like just to take on Will's point there, I think that there's a case to be made that Mayo have had a handy path to the final. I know everybody's going to say, listen, they beat Dublin. But, I mean, look what they had to come through in Connacht. Like, ultimately, a poor enough Galway side. Was it Sligo before that, whoever else? And Dublin, that, like, were just not really at the races. Like, you know, Philly McMahon on this morning talking about the lack of leadership. And I think that the hindsight merchants after the final might be able to go, well, look at what Tyrone had to come through against. Like, Cavan, Armagh, Donegal, and then as Owen would say, the best team in the country at the minute. And like that game could have gone either way, in a way that the maybe might have been less so the case with the Dublin match. So yeah, I think that the hindsight merchants might be able to afterwards go and include myself in that, say, well, look at you, wasn't it obvious? Tyrone had a really tough path to the final, and were clearly in a better run of form than Mayo were, who ultimately had a handy-ish path to get there.
I just think the Tyrone matchups were perfectly set for Kerry. They focused on Kerry's most important players and had the right kind of personnel to detail them. I'm not sure that they can match up against Mayo's important players. How are they going to stop?
Does the same go for Mayo, Tommy?
That's what I mean. And I just think that form, it's hard to read into form going into this one a little bit, because from the semi-finals, I know what you're saying about Dublin perhaps being undercooked. But Kerry played one way all game long. Kerry went for goal for that whole game. And that is what let them down. Kerry should have won that game, but they played one way the whole way along. And Tyrone were set up to stop that way, which is conceding goals after the mauling they had got in the league. And I just think it's a very, very different game 13 days later or 14 days later. Like, the matchups are going to be fascinating. Like, who takes Conor McKenna? Like, is Conor McKenna even that important? Who stops Paddy Durkin? Who's Conor Myler going to tag this week? There's no real Paddy Clifford for Mayo. He's not going to go on Ryan O'Donoghue, who's really their playmaker, because he's in close to the forward line. So I just think that Tyrone could match horses for courses against Kerry, and they could nullify some of the Kerry threats. I'm not sure they can do it this week against Mayo. I think it's just going to be chaos. And I think Mayo are going to edge it.
It is Adrian by three for Mayo, Tommy by one for Mayo, and I'm going for the same as Tommy. And then Will is going for Tyrone by two. That is this week's GAA Quick Picks.
I absolutely adore them, lads. I have unbelievable time for them, but they're a great bunch, but it's not acceptable.
Gone 9 o'clock. It is a OTB AM, and it's Friday morning, and it's the eve of the Ireland final and the Camogie final as well. Obviously, on this weekend, we're going to talk to Sarah Donovan just a couple of moments' time about all of that, and get her thoughts on it and give a bit of a preview. So, again, if you have any questions or thoughts for Sarah, do fire those into us. Here's what's coming up on OTB Sports Radio today: a OTB Gold. Jack McCaffrey, fittingly, with the weekend that's in it, from 1 o'clock today. Friday Night Racing, Gerard Johnny from 3. League of Ireland legend Mark Quigley, St Pat's striker, Team 33's subject today. And Chris Waddle in the hot seat for our evening OTB Gold from 6 this evening. And, by the way, a reminder that NFL is back. The Buccaneers edged out the Dallas Cowboys overnight in the opening game of the season. The Snap, OTB's American football show, is back as well. Back this week, The Snap on OTB, brought to you in association with the Aer Lingus College Football Classic, Northwestern against Nebraska at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday, August 27th, 2022. Going to be an absolute belter. Great atmosphere and great buzz about the town as well. Check out their brand new website, by the way, collegefootballireland.com, for more details on all of that. And keep an eye out for a preview of that show during the week, as Cian Fahey will give his thoughts on Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. OTB.
AM.
All right, it's almost 7 minutes past nine, and it is the weekend of the All-Ireland Camogie Finals. Sunday, Croke Park is the venue to be. Delighted to say that we're joined on the line by Sarah Donovan to look ahead to them. Morning to you, Sarah.
Good morning, how are you?
Good. It feels like only, and it was not that long ago, only a few months that we were sat here chatting about split seasons and club versus county and football versus camogie and all sorts of stories, sponsorship issues and all that sort of stuff. The year started out so badly, Sarah. Feels to have been over the last while, and look, we'll see in terms of attendances now on Sunday, but it feels like over the last while the semi-finals were good. The narrative around camogie is in a better place now.
They've gotten their act together. Look, it's not ideal that there isn't a sponsor for Sunday, but the Camogie Association had banked nearly 2 million last year because of COVID. So they're in a comfortable place to run the season without a sponsor, but they'll need a sponsor for next season. So I suppose Sunday is their showpiece event. They'll have to show everything and get people interested again, you know, for next year and for building for the future.
Yeah, the football is obviously leading the way in terms of attendances and interest and that kind of thing. What's your expectation of how many we'll get on Sunday?
Look, Cork haven't been there since 2018. It feels to me like it's Paddy Murray's last hurrah. I think there's lots of things about Cork that are very positive. Great support for the Cork girls from West Cork, from East Cork, from the city. I'd hope there'd be big numbers travelling for Cork on Sunday because Cork is a very passionate camogie county. So the only way they can show that support is by turning up.
Yeah, you got to see them up close in July. If you're giving some advice to Galway this weekend, what is it?
They're going to have to go high. So, you know, Hannah Looney loves to run the ball. You can't allow her to run the ball because they create an overlap and all of a sudden it's in Amy O'Connor's hand. So I think Galway are going to have to press them really high to stop them from playing the ball through the lines.
Yeah. The suspensions for both sides, or lack of, has been sort of one of the talking points, obviously, in the lead into it. Orla Cronin, very experienced player, obviously, 3-game suspension, sent off against Kilkenny in the semis. Potentially, she'll get back into it. I think there's an appeal tonight, if I'm right, to the hearings, post the hearings committee. So who knows, maybe she comes back into it. But Linda Collins, the replacement, if she's out, unbelievable composure, created a little bit of space at the end of the last game. Are they lacking much if that plays out the way it currently sits?
Well, Linda's actually been named now, regardless of Orla. So Paddy's named 14 players for his team on Sunday. So if Orla's suspension doesn't come, or, yeah. So if she isn't included, then there'll be somebody else parachuted in at very late notice. Okay. Obviously, that player knows at this point, I imagine. But Linda's kind of put up her hand now with that score. I think she was very composed both before and after the game in the semi-final. You know, it was a massive ask for her to come in and win the game for Cork as captain, being so disappointed, being left on the bench for her teammate from Courses. So she's answered a lot of questions. I do feel, though, that without Orla, Cork could be under a bit of pressure. I've mentioned during the week that Orla's great to transition the ball. So Orla will go back really deep, 45, to her own 45 and carry the ball up through the lines. And Cork don't have a player as comfortable on the ball as Orla to do that role in such a short space of time.
Yeah, and like captain, because like you said, they have that system where you win the county and so you get to nominate a player, and that's why she comes in. And to be fair, it started most of the games, I think, up to the semi-final and then comes in. And like the mentality and the maturity at, I think, only 24, but probably still maybe one of the senior players to step up and put all that disappointment to one side and show that leadership, which is a real quality, again, that you're looking for on big days like Sunday.
I was surprised she had been left out, to be honest, because in the game that we played against them, Linda has a great talent of bringing players into the game. So she plays in these little small pockets and then it's a little pass here, a little jink there, and she gets Katrina Mackey into the game, Orla Cronin into the game, Amy O'Connor into the game. Players like that are so, so versatile, but so, so crucial to teams. So hopefully that event will be Linda's last day on the bench.
What, like Cork seemed to have, looking at the profile of the team generally, looked to have struck that balance between like some of the younger players coming in and obviously some of the more experienced heads that are still there as well. And as you say, back in the final for the first time in a few years. Should the rest be worried in some ways, Sarah, just that's coming right now in a period that, like when you look at the profile of the team, in some ways looks like it's almost a transition period, but still reaching the final?
Yeah, I suppose the problem is that Hannah Looney's already expressed her intention to leave after this season. I don't know what Aisling Thompson's thoughts will be. You know, they've been around a long time, even though they're very young. But I suppose from Cork's angle, They were in a minor All-Ireland final, which they lost to Kilkenny last week. They won the under 16 a month ago. There are players coming through, but the likes of Hannah probably needs to stay around for a couple of years. Pamela Mackey, Katrina Mackey, just to get those players through. We're asking an awful lot of them to give 10 years to Cork. But I suppose Sunday will tell a lot because they need to win on Sunday. They've been away from the top table for too long.
Yeah. What do you do with Chloe Sigerson?
If I was Galway, I think she's unmarkable. And anywhere on the pitch, she'll open up the shoulders and it's a guaranteed score. You have to stop her from getting ball in hand, you know? So that's a pretty miserable job from one of the Galway players, but there are the players there to do that. And I suppose Galway's defence is probably very settled. What I'd be concerned about from a Cork point of view is that Galway's bench has a lot of weight. So Rebecca Henley can come in, Niamh McGrath can come in, Tara Kenny can come in. Galway are missing Heather Cooney through a cruciate injury, but, you know, like Siobhan Gardner, Emma Helbert, and then, of course, Captain Fantastic Sarah Durbin going for her fourth year as captain. She is a mountain inside there. You know, she's a rock. You know, she's the equivalent of the rock. And Cork are going to be under a lot of pressure on Sunday to retain possession and get scores.
Yeah, and from the Galway point of view, Pauly Murray had checked that same thing that you were mentioning in terms of the depth that's there, and like, you know, maybe if it's tight late in the game, then that's something that comes into play a bit, and that may be where they have the upper hand a little bit.
I think that's where they have the upper hand. Niamh McGrath is basically a direct replacement for Niamh Kilkenny. Niamh has umpteen All-Irelands, an incredible camogie player, is working in Dublin with William Fry, and I imagine that's probably why she, you know, is out of the starting 15 right now. But for her to be able to parachute in for Niamh Kilkenny if something was to go wrong, Cork don't have that same experience on the bench.
Yeah, and what are you thinking in terms of how it plays out, Sarah, in terms of like the expanses of Croke Park, which team that suits better, or in terms of key matchups, what are you thinking?
Looking at the brass facts on the match the last day, I thought Cork and Kilkenny was a much better game. I thought Cork's striking was much better, so they were spraying ball much, much better. But I suppose I'd just be conscious that Galway were there in December. They were at the All-Ireland final, obviously lost to Kilkenny. They were there again at the end of May, start of June in the league final. They've been in Croke Park a number of times and haven't left themselves down. I thought the last day against Tipperary, the Galway inside line was quiet. Orla McGrath, Siobhan McGrath, Ailish O'Reilly. They'll have watched that match back. They'll be disappointed. They're going to come out all guns blazing. And I suppose you'd rather that they had a brilliant game in the semi-final, shot the lights out, and then came into the final nearly over-pressured. Whereas now I think they have something to prove.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't sure if Kilkenny had come through on the other side. Is that a better thing for Galway in terms of like the disappointment of last year and trying to put that to bed? I mean, I'm sure they'll have themselves well psyched for Cork either way.
Yeah, look, there's a healthy rivalry between the three top teams. There's a point in it every year. Like, I suppose Cork will feel that refereeing decisions went against them against Galway in the last couple of games. They'll be, I suppose, anxious for a fair day. And Galway, by comparison, beat Kilkenny 3 weeks ago by a point in the group stages. So I suppose they'll feel they've put that one to bed, and now it's Cork, and now it's a clear run to the Hogan Stand.
And what's going to happen?
My head says that there's a lot of momentum with Cork for this one, so I think Cork are going to win by two.
Wow, right. Tight game. We take it. What about the intermediate final? Is the curtain raiser to that Antrim-Kilkenny?
Yeah, so Kilkenny and Antrim, Antrim were in the All-Ireland final last year in December against Down. I was up at it in Breffni Park. Kilkenny are, I suppose, an unknown entity. The last time they won the All-Ireland was 2016, and Leanne Fenley's back, centre-back for them. She was in Australia for 6 years, so you've got some great stories around the Kilkenny team. But Maeve Kelly from Antrim is an outstanding camogie player, and I think Antrim will feel, having lost the Northern Derby last year, they're coming back to Croke Park this time to prove something. So my money's on Antrim.
All right. Well, look, it's going to be a brilliant day at Croke Park on Sunday. We hope the crowds come out and the weather stays good and the games are good as well. Sarah, well previewed. Thanks a million.
No worries. Thanks.
Sarah Donovan on the line there, looking ahead to the Camogie finals this weekend. It is 16 minutes past nine. It's Friday morning, and we still have John Giles to come for you, by the way, and some more as well from OMA ahead of tomorrow's All-Ireland football final too. And if you've been paying attention at all over the last while, Jonathan Hill and his Stephen Kenny quotes in the back pages this morning, the FAI chief exec. But the Irish women's national team, of course, was the first ever exclusive primary sponsor being unveiled. And another massive story that emerged in the last 24 hours, and they've announced a landmark deal with Sky. And it really is good news all around, you'd have to say. Vera Powell, the manager, was in hand at the launch. She spoke to her own Stephen Doyle about the FAI's recent announcement to give equal pay to both senior national sides.
That equal pay deal, of course, that you refer to as cut between, well, the involvement of the two captains, Seamus Coleman and Katie McCabe. Do you know how this whole move was initiated? Was there an approach by the men's team to the women's team or vice versa? How did it come about?
It's been an ongoing discussion already for years. We came from very, very far from this issue of changing the tracksuits.
Yeah, it goes back to Emma Byrne and the other players.
Yeah,
having
although
the protest.
That has happened in any country, I've done it also. And I probably need to change now in the toilet also. But it stood for a place of women in football. That was it more. It was not the changing of the tracksuits. The girls also say that, the players. It's not the change of the tracksuits. It's what it stands for. And if I look now, from the moment I came in, I've never felt that anyone wanted to treat us differently than others. But we only cost money. But the fact, the way that we were dealing with it, and that we were realistic, and that we were not demanding in the world things that we couldn't, because we knew when the time is right, it will come. Because we felt equal approach, and now the time suddenly was there. It just came out of almost out of the sky. It dropped out of the sky, if I can make that sentence. I think the initiative was, of course, the ongoing discussions, but the initiative was from the men's team, especially the captain of the men's team,
Seamus Coleman.
Yeah, who said, we need to do something now, because by doing that, we support this fight for the women. And we know that we have the key in our hands for that deal. So they've been, from that very first moment, they've been the key partner into these negotiations. We're very grateful, but especially very proud of the men of our country.
The male players, you know, whatever about the international payment they get, but the salaries they get there from their clubs, it means they don't have to worry about finances when they come and play for their country. The women's team aren't the same, but now they have this equal pay. Do you think that will help performances on the pitch?
Of course, they have time to rest now. If I take Chloe Moustaki as an example, she ruptured her ACL because she was leaving the house at 6:30 in the morning, coming back in the house after training in 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, and the next day had to leave the house at 6:30 again. So there comes a moment that fatigue is coming in a way that you hardly can avoid injuries, constantly being overloaded, not having the time to rest, but yet having to train because she had a kind of professional contract in England. But players like her will now be able to work less, so that to have the time to eat, to have the time to rest next to their training, because the training intensity is high, but now they have the time to actually get their training into quality of where they play.
Women's National Team Manager Vera Powell in conversation with Stephen Doyle at the launch of the Sky sponsorship yesterday. A really important point there, but it's not about the tracksuits. It was the broader point about equal pay in terms of conditions. And Seamus Coleman stood up as well. You have to take your hat off there and say fair play to him for helping to force all of that through. So, Golf Weekly and its latest episode is live. It was a Solheim Cup beyond her wildest dream, of course, for Leona Maguire as she went from a rookie to a legend early on in the week. The lads in Golf Weekly say it was inevitable.
She is a rookie, but she's experienced. And the arc of progress has been steadily pointing only in one direction for the last 3 years, and that's upward. So, you know, she's a record breaker at the Solheim Cup. She's also a record breaker in the last round of the Evian Championship. She shot the lowest round in a major ever in the men or women's game with a 61. Ever. And I saw somewhere, it was like, they calculated that's roughly 50,000 rounds of golf. And, wow, you know, cumulatively, yeah. So she's two-time Olympian. She has been progressing always. And I saw a quote from Dan Brooks, who was her coach at Duke. And he said, this isn't surprising at all. what you have to understand is that there's a level of work there. There's a level of toughness, both physically and mentally. It's incredible. She's tougher than anybody else. That translates to being really good in match play. And this is the ultimate compliment. She locks in like Jack Nicklaus. And I didn't know this about Dan Brooks, but this is a guy who's won 7 national titles in 37 years as a head coach. So he knows a thing or two about coaching young talent. And for him to kind of highlight that Leona Maguire has a toughness reminiscent of Jack Nicklaus or perhaps Tiger Woods is the ultimate compliment. And certainly this isn't flash in the pan stuff. I mean, next year she mightn't have the astonishing moments she's had this last week, but it leaves you in no doubt that this is a player that's going to feature for a long time to come at the very top of the LPGA Tour.
Very hard to replicate what, as Fiona rightly says, what she's done over the last few weeks. And as you can see there, the Golf Weekly this week brought to you in association with Sky Sports exclusively. The place to watch the Ryder Cup as well upcoming. Do stay tuned to the lads for more of that. And they have a great prize as well to give away this week. So how do I get my hands on all of that? You're wondering to yourself. Well, you want to hear the full show or the rest of all that great stuff that the lads have over on Patreon. You can head to otbsports.com/golfweekly or indeed just head over to Patreon directly and type in Golf Weekly, and it'll bring you directly there, and you can sign up for the sum of $3.99 a month plus VAT, and you'll get access to that and any exclusive events we have around the majors as well, and including around the Ryder Cup, and also to our Discord channel, which daily is alight with the finest of golf chat and opinion and analysis and reaction and all of that good stuff. So it all lives over there. I should note as well, by the way, some breaking news from the world of cricket this morning, that the fifth test, India against England at Old Trafford, has been cancelled. A number of the tourist backroom staff have tested positive for COVID-19, so they were unable to field a team. They fear further cases spreading through their squad. So that is it for now. That's been cancelled. So it is 9:24. It's Friday morning. You're watching OTB AM. John Giles still to come before we leave you at 10 o'clock in conversation with Nathan from the show last night. But it's to further build up to the match of the weekend, and we've been painting the greater cultural context with Owen, who's up in Tyrone, and earlier caught up with Enda McGinley and Declan Bogue as well, and talking about how the county splits. And it's always a common theme when it comes to any of the Ulster teams playing in the Ulster final. And here on that tone is another piece for you. In February 1988, Aidan McInnespy was killed at a checkpoint in Auchtercloy in County Tyrone moments after crossing the border on his way to play for Agaloo in a GAA match. And outside the Agaloo club today, there's a monument dedicated to Aidan McInnespy, and Aidan's friend, Mickey Muldoon, met on there yesterday.
To me personally, Aidan was a very close friend of myself. I knew Aidan throughout the years, and the McInnespy family, a very close family, and we all recognise, we thought it was only appropriate that there was something erected for Aidan's memory, that throughout the whole of Ireland and the world at this stage recognise Aidan, and clubs throughout Ireland all recognise Aidan's monument, and as you see, it's decorated here for the All Ireland, which every year is decorated, no matter who's in it. We had Limerick and Cork just passed there in the Hurling, so we make no difference to anybody. We have Donegal, we have Kerry, Tipperary, we have flags sent from all different counties, and they all appreciate and acknowledge the fact that Aidan's monument, that their counties is recognised, and their clubs also, with county clubs, especially our local clubs here that might be in county finals, they are all recognised also. I think everybody knows Aidan's story by now, and what really did happen, we know we're not going to hear the truth from the British side of it, but I think the Irish people and people throughout the world know and are well used to the lies that have been told. What we see about Aidan's name being kept alive, it's not only Aidan alone, but we also had two other members of this club murdered also. And there's
a lot of clubs throughout the north especially had been killed and murdered by security forces or loyalist forces. And it's also to recognise for justice Aidan's case, trying to get justice for Aidan's case, is also trying to get justice for everybody else in similar circumstances. And I mean, nobody ever wants to see this back again, and we don't think it will come back, you know, troubles. So people want to move forward. And I say now, the club here itself is a great club going now. And just yesterday evening, we're out here yesterday evening, decorating here. And the amount of young people that's out here playing football, children and from knee high, from I'd say 8 year old, it's so unbelievable. I mean, we hadn't got that in our time. In 1986, Tyrone were playing Kerry in the All Ireland, and me and Aidan, God rest Aidan, we went to Croke Park, and this is the caps that we had worn in 86 to the All Ireland. And whenever we came home, we'd got beat, as everybody knows. Kerry were up to half time. We were well ahead, but second half, Kerry stuffed us. I suppose Pat Spillane probably himself nearly stuffed us. But anyhow, on the return journey home here, the checkpoint was just down the road, where Aidan was murdered from. And on arriving at the checkpoint, there was an old shed. Now, it was an old checkpoint at the time, before they built the large one. Aidan was told to pull into the shed, which we did, and the soldiers proceeded to search the vehicle, and the usual old harassment and crap that was going on. And I had the Tyrone flag with me, and I took the Tyrone flag out and I stuck it up on the side of the shed. And the soldier says, "What are you at, mate? What are you at?" He says, "Didn't Kerry kick your asses? Didn't Kerry kick your asses?" Now, and they were even effing and blinding. It wasn't just as nice as, "Didn't they kick your asses?" But anyhow, basically, I says, "Yeah, so they did." And he says, "Well, why are you putting that up, mate? What's that all about?" And I says, "Look," I says, "Tyrone will be back." I says, "We'll be back." And the soldier didn't know what to make of this. And my words come through. We did come back, and we won 3 All-Ireland since that. And now we're back in another one, and hopefully we'll have a fourth one. A lot of people leave. We think that's like an angel's. But that we have had things from all counties left here, like we memorials, we things. There was no time ago, there was a Limerick whore, but they do get lost, unfortunately. But people leave wee tributes and things to their counties and clubs, and which the McInnesbys do appreciate. And at times, I would give some of them over to the McInnesbys, or they may collect them themselves, because they do get lost, unfortunately, at times. So it's wee things like that. It seems to mean a lot to the McInnesbys too. We have all nationalities now playing across the divide, religious divide. It makes no difference. They're all accepted to play for the clubs, and that's the way we want it going forward. And I think that's the way eventually to unite everybody.
Wise words there from Mickey Muldoon in conversation with Owen yesterday, following the murder of his friend Aidan McInnesby. And it should be pointed out as well that former soldier, he will stand trial for it looks as though this month at Belfast Belfast Crown Court, the unlawful killing of Ed McInnesby, February 21st, 1988, and the former grenadier was talking about how it was an accident at the time, and as I said, that case will come before the courts. You can check out all of Owen's chats. He's been doing a lot of build up to the game culturally and on the football side as well. They'll all be available up on our YouTube channel over the course of today, so very much recommend that you head along and check those out as well, by the way, as all the build up and coverage of the game over the weekend on Off the Ball Saturday, 1 o'clock on your radios and across your social channels as well. All-Ireland preview panel, all in association with Renault. It'll be Peter Canavan, David Brady and Alan Brogan there. Also, Lee McHale is going to be in Croke Park. My God, what is going to happen to Lee McHale if they end up winning that game, Mayo? Mossy Quinn is going to watch the game in the studio, so all the full analysis from the two lads over the course of the day. Football Saturday as well, we'll talk about the women's kit sponsor, Ronaldo debut obviously as well. Karen Duggan, the former Ireland international in the company of Dan McDonald. And then over on Sunday, that's all with John, by the way. And Sunday, then, Will is in the hot seat. 1 o'clock as well. Austin O'Malley, John O'Mahony and Enda McGinley will all review the All-Ireland Football Final. The paper review, Johnny Ward and Timmy McCarthy and Sarah Dunham, who we've been chatting to a bit earlier on, will be at Croke Park for those Camogie Finals, Cork v Galway in the big one. And live Premier League commentary, Leeds United against Liverpool from 4:30. And that'll be Vinnie Perth in the company of Stephen Doyle. So that's what's coming up on News Talk over the weekend as well. A reminder also that you can subscribe to the OTB AM podcast. You can get that on the OTB Sports app. Search OTB AM wherever it is that you get your pods. Join the 120,000 plus who subscribe to the OTB YouTube channel so far to get all of our best stuff ready whenever and wherever it is that you are. We're going to leave you this morning, and a very good morning to you, and enjoy the weekend sport whatever it is you're watching. Thanks a million for checking us out during the week. We'll talk to you with all the very best, by the way, of reviews from Croke Park both Saturday and Sunday and Monday morning from 7:30.
OTB AM with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.